Okay, so what was yesterday? It's not a trick question. This one's easy. Independence Day. It was the 4th of July. So that got me to thinking about things. And actually, I saw these a bunch of postings on Facebook. I use Facebook quite a bit. If you're not my friend yet, you know, you need to let me know because I'm trying to out and get more friends than Jackie. She's got more than me, and I'm working hard to catch up. But there's something, it's like a common thing that comes up. It happens on Independence Day, happens on Memorial Day, and people are thankful for things. And I want you to tell me, this. I need lots of participation this morning, or are we going to be done in like 15 minutes, and I'm going to start leading singing, and that's really scary. So we need the participation going on. What's something when you think about Memorial Day and 4th of July, what are you thankful for? What's one thing you always say thank you for? Our freedom, that's one. Anything else? For the vacation day? That's good. Jerry, I think I heard the answer I wanted. The men serving in the armed forces. And women. Yes. You almost generationally clashed yourself there, Jerry. It is interesting that we do that, and it's Memorial Day, 4th of July. We always put it, hey, Brett, we always put it out there. I don't know what you are to me. That's like my son-in-law's brother, so you're Brad. He's here from Tennessee. On the 4th of July, the Memorial Day, we always thank the people who make our freedom possible. And I think that's phenomenal. There are members of this congregation who've served in the armed forces. When an elder sneaks in behind you, you got to worry what's going on. No, Joe, you don't need that. I'm going to say some crazy stuff this morning. You're always thankful for those people who are out there. And why are we thankful that they're out there? To protect us. You know, it gives us the freedom to worship. I personally am thankful that the people are out there. You know, I that people will be on the front line, that people will fight. Because I'm afraid. I don't have any trouble telling you that the thought of going to war scares me. I always loved war movies. I guess I'm a guy. That's the stuff we love, you know. I thought it was one of the greatest days of my adult life when Midway and Tora Tora came out on DVD. Those were great things. And if you're, you know, those are good movies. I love them. But I'm afraid of war. I don't like the concept of being shot at. There's something about that. It scares me a lot. And so I'm much happier sitting here in my home, in the air conditioning, knowing that there's people out there protecting me. That makes me much happier. How many of you feel that way? It's just honest. You know, it's some of us just don't have that in us. You know, I mean, I always feel like if I ever got, you know, put in a situation, I'd do something right. But I don't know. I definitely didn't volunteer to go out there like many today. You know, like I guess everyone today volunteers to go out there. So I think we're thankful for our freedom. And I think I got to cover some stuff, Gladys. I'll get to you in a little bit. But really, a lot of the stuff that we get to comes to us without a lot of effort on our part, doesn't it? We don't really put out a lot. I was trying to think, what do I really do to support the troops? And I think I'm a good American, but at the end of the day, really, I pay my tax dollars. And I pray for them, which is very important. But that's my participation in protecting America's freedom. I pay my tax dollars and I pray for them. Two important things, but that's my participation. I'm a passive participant in fighting for America's freedom, as opposed to an active participant. Would you agree with that? I mean, prayer is an active thing. I'm not discounting prayer, but I'm thinking we're in the concept of war here. I'm thinking about going out and fighting. I'm passive in that activity. So that's what I was thinking about yesterday, and obviously that, you know, I think on 4th of July, I think about the freedoms that entail there, you know, you get to be grateful for what people do for you. So I started thinking about my Christian life, and the question came to my mind is, real simple question, is are we or are we not at war as Christians? Do you agree that we're at war? Do you have anything in the Bible that supports that? Anybody want to throw anything out here? What? We get Jerry. You can't quite. Don't have to quote it. See. I always think there's two minds when it comes to scriptures, and like I'm a tax guy and I do the Internal Revenue Code all the time. I cannot quote any Internal Revenue Code at all. Don't know any of it. So I at least feel good that I struggle sometimes with knowing where the things scriptures are in the Bible. But I know it's there. And that and a good concordance can always get you the answer. So if you're like me, Jerry, you always got to have your concordance handy. But right, the devil is our adversary who's roaming the earth seeking who he may devour. Right? And down here we had put on the whole armor of God. Do you know where that is? Ephesians? Why don't we go to Ephesians chapter 6 and read there real quick? We're not really going to read about the armor. I just want you to read, are we or are we not at war? Ouch. Ephesians chapter 6, I'm going to start reading verse 10. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the full armor of God that you may stand firm against the schemes of the devil. Now, that's the New American Standard, and I'm pretty sure at least one of these translations says your adversary, the devil, if I have to remember my old King James correctly from years ago. Ephesians 6, 10 and 11. Well, we definitely have an opponent, and that's one thing you got to have when you're at war, right? You definitely have to have an opponent. You got to have someone you're fighting. How about we go to 2 Corinthians chapter 10? Starting in verse 3. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. What's the purpose of war? Not religious war. What's the purpose of secular war? To defeat the enemy. That's your outcome. That's what you want. You want to defeat the enemy. There's a famous radio host who says, the purpose of the military is to break things and kill people. That's the purpose of the military, to break things and kill people. That's what they do. And when you're trying to accomplish something, I happen to work for a company now, at least for the next month, that has no corporate vision. And I love my job. I'm in charge. I'm the boss. It's cool being the boss. I like that, Joe. I took off Thursday and no one said anything to me. That was kind of nice. I like being the boss. But we have no corporate vision. We have no idea what we want to do. So we go into work every day and play like accountants. Because we haven't yet defined what it is that we're trying to accomplish as a company. We don't know we don't know what our mission is. We don't know what we're trying to do to accomplish that mission. You know, don't want to get too political, but you can go back and look at some of the America's wars throughout the years, and there have been wars where we had a very firm mission. You look at World War II, and the country as a whole had a united mission. We knew what we wanted to achieve, and as a country, that vision allowed us to achieve it. Everyone was participating in it some way or the other. You can look at what's going on today, and without, you know, once again, I don't want to get into a political discussion, but there are definitely people in this country who do not support what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. And our country does not have a joint vision about how and what the military is supposed to be doing in Afghanistan and Iran. Without a discussion of who's right or wrong, that is a fact about what we can say going on in this country. And because of that, we don't have a joint vision, a joint mission about what to accomplish. And that's how I feel at my office. I have no idea what I want to do. I know what I want to do, but sometimes it disagrees. I'll find out it disagrees with my boss, who I do have one, lives in Philadelphia, find out what he wants, and it's different. And so it creates frustration, and actually it creates lack of movement forward. So if we are at war, and I think we define that, we have to define a few things. We have to define, one, who we're at war against and what our mission is. So tell me. We just read this a couple ago in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. It's got some good answers for you here. Who are we at war against? Sorry, I'm a little deaf. Satan, the devil, we're at war against the devil. Okay? If we're okay, that's all we need. We're at war against the devil. What's our mission? Let's define we first. We'll define we as the church. Us here. How about that? Let's keep it here. What is our mission? Okay, good mission statement to start with. Get to heaven. Is there anything more than that? Anything that we have to do to get there? Dirk says we have to bring others with us. Anybody disagreeing with this so far? So what we want to do is get to heaven, and we want to take other people with us. Okay, that's a how. But we're going to get there, so hold that for a second. So we got to get to heaven, and we want to bring as many people with us as we can. How do we do that? First, we have to overcome sin, right? Are there any specific commands that were given in the Bible about what we're supposed to be doing to achieve this? This is all still introduction. We're going to get in the meat of the class in a second here. Study. We have to study. How about a simple mission statement? How about we look at Mark chapter 16? I think this is a good command mission statement. I'm going to start in verse 15. And he said to them, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation." That's a command mission statement, right? So if our mission, if our plan is to go to heaven and bring as many people with us as we can, what we have to do, according to the command we're given here, is to go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. That's one of them. And we could spend the next 2 days, 3 weeks talking about all the different commands we have. And I want to stay with my outline so I can get done with class today. How about Acts chapter 1? I like this one too. This is obviously Jesus speaking to the apostles here. Chapter 1, verse 8, verse 7, let's start there. "It is not for you to know times or epochs which the Father has fixed by his own authority, but you shall receive power when the Holy Ghost has come upon you, and you shall be my witnesses both in Jerusalem and in Judea and Samaria and even to the remotest parts of the earth." See, the apostles were given a mission statement, were given a command about what they were supposed to do, and they knew how to achieve it. And they did achieve it. We know later in Scripture it says that everyone had heard. We have a mission statement. We have commands to get there. The question and the point of today's class is, what are we doing about this? And the reason I asked that question is because when I was thinking about what am I doing to help this country, how do I participate in our military mission, I started to question, what are we doing to participate as Christians in our mission? And I know we do a lot, and I'm not berating anyone here. This is just to get you start thinking about yourself a little bit, because I know I spend some time thinking about myself. What am I doing to help? And am I as passive in my Christian participation as I am in my participation with America's military fighting in Iran and Afghanistan and wherever else they may be fighting? I think it's a valid question, because I can create a lot of corollaries. I say a lot of prayers. I say a lot of prayers for the military. And I say a lot of prayers for the church here. And I pay my taxes. And though, please, don't throw anything at me, elders. Please do not say I'm saying this is a tax, but, I pay my tax here, too. We put our money in the contribution plate. And I know that's not what it's not a tax. But I think we can fall into a hole as Christians that we're Americans, and we relate the way this country works. And when you gain a perception of how things work, you can relate that perception to everything in your life. And if doing your part is saying prayers for the country and paying your tax, is doing your part showing up at church, saying your prayers, and giving your contribution? All of which you should be doing, but is that the sum total of what we're supposed to be doing as Christians? Are we supposed to be doing it, or are we supposed to let others do it for us? And that's really the point of today's class, is what about the others? There's been a lot of great people who have spoken in this congregation. There's a lot of great people who have been members of this congregation who have done tons, have done amazing amounts to further the work of God here on this earth. We're participating in something now that I think is awesome, and it's taking leadership of this work in Paraguay. We're going to touch people in South America. We're going to have the opportunity to do that. And I think that we as a congregation need to figure out and make sure that we're not just letting other people do the work for us, but that we're actively participating in it. And I think there's a danger in that. And I want you to go to Numbers chapter 32. 1 Corinthians 10:11 says, and I'm going to read that to you real quick. You're going to Numbers 32. I'm going to read you 1 Corinthians. I brought my thick Bible, so now it takes me forever to find everything. 1 Corinthians 10:11. Paul's talking in chapter 10 here about Israel, and I guess you could say that some of the mistakes they made, but it says in chapter 10, verse 11, "Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the end of the ages have come." We know our God's the same today as He was in the Old Testament. And there's no question that we cannot learn great things from reading these stories in the Old Testament. Some of the best stories, you know, of my childhood, obviously the little name Daniel. You know, I thought Daniel was the coolest cat in the world. Still do. He's a good guy. But Numbers chapter 32, I think this applies to what I'm talking about this morning. Where we are, anybody know where we are right here in Numbers chapter 32? The Israelites have been wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, and they're right on the brink. They're about to cross the Jordan to go in and take the promised land. You know, it's a new generation of people. All those who had, they sent the spies in to spy out the land. They came back, and all but two said, "Oh, we can't go in there. There's giants. We'll be destroyed." And because of their lack of faith, their attitude, God sent them wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. And all those of that generation who had that lack of faith died in the wilderness. And now here they are on the brink. And Moses, who knows he's not going into the promised land, has been told that by God, is about to send them across. So here we're at the start of Numbers chapter 32. And they've already conquered the area on the west side of Jordan. Verse 1. "Now the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad had an exceedingly large number of livestock. So when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that it was indeed a place suitable for livestock, the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben came and spoke to Moses and Eleazar, the priest, and to the leaders of the congregation, saying, 'Ataroth, Dibon, Jezer, Niram, Heshbon, Eliah, Saban, Nebo, and Beon,'" I hope I got those somewhat right, "'the land which the Lord conquered before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock.' And they said, 'If we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan.'" What just happened there? What did Reuben and Gad just say to Moses and the rest of the Israelites? I'm sorry? "We don't want to go. We don't want to receive what God's given us. We're pretty happy where we are. So why don't you guys go ahead and go on over Jordan? We'll stay here." Well, what was there to be done on the other side of Jordan? I'm sorry? Yeah, I can't hear near as well as David, so you guys got to talk a lot louder. They had to conquer the land. There was work to be done, wasn't there?
They had to take the land God had given them.
They had to take the land that God had given them. There was a command to be fulfilled, to be obeyed, I guess is the right word. And two of the tribes decided, hey, this is pretty good where we are. We can, you know, there's lots of land for our cattle and our livestock. We can hang out here and our lives will be good. You guys go ahead and go on over. Happy birthday. We're done. Well, how do you think Moses reacted to that? We're going to read in a second, but how do you think he reacted? It's interesting here. Starting in verse 6. But Moses said to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Reuben, shall your brothers go to war while you yourself sit here? Shall your brothers go to war while you yourself sit here? That's kind of the key verse in this chapter to me. And especially with my thoughts I was having yesterday about my participation in the growth of the church. There are a lot of great men and great women who do a lot of great things to help the church grow. And we see successes and we gain joy in those successes. I'm not saying that we shouldn't. When there's success in the church, we should be joyful for it. But brethren, should we sit here while our brothers go to war? Is it okay for us? Is it okay for us to sit here with a life of ease while others do? While others go to war? Verse 7, well, let me ask a question. What's the impact of that? What's the impact of people doing nothing while others do something? How many of you have jobs? Not as many as a couple years ago, right? How many of you get mad because you do more than the people you work with? Oh, y'all think pretty high of yourself, don't you? How does it make you feel when you're pulling your weight? Jackie, how do you feel when you have to clean all the time and I'm not doing anything? Thank you, but we know that's not true. How does it make you feel when you're pulling your weight and the people around you aren't? Really? I mean, how does it make you feel? I know how I feel. I get angry. I get frustrated and I get discouraged. Right? I get to the point where I have trouble getting up to go into the office. Because I'm the only one, I feel. Now, is that narcissistic? I always forget these fancy words. You know, I feel like I'm the only one who's doing anything around here. And if it weren't for me, the whole thing would collapse. That's a lie. I could leave tomorrow. They'd be fine. But, you know, that's the way you feel. You get to where you're the only... Well, how does that work? How does that work with the church? Look at what Moses says to the tribes here in verse 7. Now why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given them? Moses acknowledges the fact that the two tribes not going to fight is a discouragement. People not participating is a discouragement to those who do participate. This is what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. Now, we're going to go talk about right here about what happened when they sent the spies in originally. And we're going to get into a second here. We're going to talk about God's reaction to that. So, don't read ahead. Talk to me for a second. How do you think God's going to react to Gad and Asher here? I know you know the story. If you know the whole answer, you don't have to, you know, spit it all out because we're going to get to it. But how do you think God is going to react to the tribes of Gad and Asher? Angry? You got to talk louder, guys. I'm serious. I can't hear anything. Can I borrow that, Joe? God's angry. Anything else? Raise your hand. I'll point at you. If that way, maybe you can yell and feel bad and feel okay over that. God's going to get angry? He swore. Oh, you're reading ahead, aren't you? Fear, I said don't read ahead. God's going to be angry. Is he going to react to it? How did God react the first time? When they went up there the first time? What did it cost the Israelites the first time they showed a lack of faith? Cost them 40 years. Cost a whole bunch of people their lives. A chance, instead of 40 years living in a land that flowed with milk and honey, they got 40 years of wandering around a wilderness, moving from campsite to campsite to campsite, and then back to the campsite they left, and back to the campsite they left. 40 years walking in what, not a circle, but some type of shape. Verse 9, for when they went up from the valley of Eshkol and saw the land, they discouraged the sons of Israel. And there's that word discouraged again. So that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger burned in that day, and he swore, saying, none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. For they did not follow me fully, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh, and the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun. For they follow the Lord fully. So the Lord's anger burned against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness for 40 years until the entire generation of those who had done evil in the sight of the Lord was destroyed. So God was angry. God dealt out a punishment immediately. You're going to wander for 40 years. Now here's Gad and Asher, like, you know, we're done. We like the land here on the west side of Jordan. We're happy here. Y'all guys go ahead and go over and take that. You know, that's the better land. You guys go ahead and take that. We're okay here. We'll hold down the fort. Verse 14, now behold, you have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men to add still more to the burning anger of the Lord against Israel. That's a pretty harsh statement. I mean, all these guys wanted to do was, they had been wandering, you know, they had been in captivity. And then they had wandered, they had the Egyptian army chase them. Then they got through the Red Sea, God's help. Then they had 40 years in the wilderness. And, you know, they did have a lot of cattle. You know, they had all the livestock. All they wanted to do was to take this land. The land that they had already, you know, they had already conquered this land. There was no one there. They'd done that. They'd helped with that part. So they had this land, and they were going to be comfortable. It doesn't really seem, you know, from human logic, that doesn't really seem like that bad of a thing. You know, they just wanted to rest. And this verse, it's a pretty harsh verse. You have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men. Verse 15. For if you turn away from following him, he will once more abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy. Who will they destroy? Read that. All these people. You know, what do you say about that? What's your impact? What's our impact if we're not pulling our weight? If we're not doing our part? What was the impact? What was the impact of Gad and, I almost said Asher, because that's how I say it, you know, I say the 12 sons. What was the impact of Gad and Reuben not wanting to go across the river? If they didn't go across the river to help fight in the land, take the land, what was going to be the impact to the rest of Israel? Destroy all. And that, sometimes it's the little words that mean a lot, isn't it? The sin was going to be Gad and Reuben's. Who was the sin going to impact? Everyone. If we're sitting here not pulling our weight as Christians, who is the sin going to impact? Now, I know it's going to impact us first. We're responsible for our own actions. But Moses twice used the word discouragement in describing how this action is going to affect the rest of Israel. And we got a congregation of, I don't know, 450? 400? 390? Wait until I get it. You know, I figured June would tell me in a minute when I got the right number. You know, and you know, when you have a big group, not everyone can do the same stuff. And that's the end of the class. We're going to talk about what we can do. What can we do? Because not all of us can do the same things. Not everyone can get up in front of a room and teach a class. Not everyone has got the skills to be a missionary and go overseas. Not everyone can do everything. We all have different talents. And I don't want to belittle or berate anyone who is fulfilling the best of their talents. You all know that personally. I don't. We all have to examine ourselves personally to know if we're doing what we can do or not. We have to do that. I'm not trying to jump on you for that. I'm just saying that the interesting to me, the impact that Moses attributed to the actions of Gad and Reuben. Verse 16. Then they came near to him and said, "We will build here sheepfolds for our livestock and our cities, and cities for our little ones, but we ourselves will be armed, ready to go before the sons of Israel until we have brought them to their place, while our little ones live in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until every one of the sons of Israel has possessed his inheritance." So at the end of the day, Gad and Reuben made the right decision. They girded up for war and went out and fought. Now, Moses gave them some time, let them build cities. I don't know how long this time was, but they had some time to build some fortified cities so the little ones can stay home and stay safe. But Gad and Reuben did the right thing. They decided to go fight. So what can we learn from this for us today? Well, if we're at war, and go ahead, Dirk. It's called repentance. Yeah. If we're not doing, that's what Gad and Reuben did. You know, they realized that they were not participating in the mission that the Israelites had. They had chosen to sit it out, and their change of heart was repentance in that area. But if we are at war, and we have a mission, the question that we have to answer, and I asked it before, is do we sit by and let others do the work for us? Or do we participate actively? And if we are going to, and I know the answer, it's one of these easy questions, I already know the answer to it. What's the right answer? Do we sit by and let others do it, or do we participate? There you go, Novell. That's an easy one, right? If the CPA exam was like that, I'd have passed the first time. You know, there's no question that we have to participate. Well, that's what we're going to do, Joe. We're going to define participate. And I'm going to let you help me define participate, because I think that's the important part here, is what can we do? Because I have recently, I don't want to use the right words. I'm a deacon now. How about that? And I have found out that we have this huge list of jobs that need to be done in this congregation. Did you know that? Do you know there's something, there are so many things that have to be done to keep an organization of 400 people running. I mean, it's amazing. And we have this huge list, and not all the jobs are full. And that's understandable. You know, in any organization, you know, sometimes only, you know, around 50 to 60% of the people really actively participate. You know, and that's okay if you're talking about, you know, Jupiter Quest Athletic Association. Or if you're talking about the Boys and Girls Club, that's okay. We're not talking about a charitable organization. We're talking about the Lord's Church. And there's a different participation requirement in the Lord's Church. If we don't participate, what's going to happen to those around us? How about Numbers 32:7? It discourages our brethren. You know, lack of involvement. What's the consequence to you personally of a lack of involvement? Lack of growth. I heard you that time. Lack of growth. Proverbs 18:9, he also who is slack in his work is brother to him who destroys. So we don't want to be that person, do we? So what can we do? What can we do? With your skill set. Let me say, everyone has a different skill set. Everyone's got to do a part. Let's think about things we can do. Trudy, tell me what you can do. Fulfill the Great Commission. How can you help do that? That's awesome, Trudy. That's awesome. What can you do? Yes, sir.
Be a good
you can be a good neighbor. What's one of the worst things you can do? What do we do in our society now we live in a different. I mean, I'm not old like some of you guys are. And I'm older than others of you, unfortunately. We're very insular now, aren't we? I know we moved into a new community and we know one person, two people, maybe, in the whole community. That wasn't, Joe, is that how it was when you grew up? Did you know your neighbors? Did people know who you were? Can you talk about where you go to church at work? You know? We're in a different society now that limits us. Well, the worst thing that we can do is to become a neighbor that no one knows. Because how can you have influence on people? The worst thing you can do is become so insular that no one knows you're a Christian. And it's tough when you think that if I sit here and I speak up, I might lose my job. Boy, that's tough. And I would never even start to tell you that's what you should do. But you've got to decide where you need to be and what's more important. And if this is a war and you're supposed to be an active participant in it, what does that mean to you? What do you have to do? We do have a mission. We are supposed to teach. Go and teach. We're supposed to live by example. We're supposed to show our loves for one another. These are all things that we're commanded to do. And we have to find out how we can participate. Because the last thing we want to do, I mean, look at Gad and Reuben. Gad and Reuben had done work. They had had a long, hard track to get there. And all they wanted to do was rest. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 8:12. First Corinthians chapter 8, verse 12. If we are discouragers and we're not pulling our weight, whatever that may be, and I would say I'm not the person to make all these decisions. I'm just asking you to think about it yourself. Everybody can do more. I'm always confident of that. I tell my employees all the time, everybody can do more. You say you're doing all you can do, but I know you're not, because everybody can do more. And if you're going to do more somewhere in your life, I would rather you be doing more here than you are at your job, because doing more here has a bigger impact on the rest of us, has a bigger impact on this society. Because the more that Christians stand out and are not afraid, the more the society is impacted by us. And if we don't, we become discouragers. And 1 Corinthians 8:12 says, and if we're discouraging the brethren, we're sinning against the brethren. And thus, by sinning against the brethren, wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Brethren, if we are not pulling our weight and we're becoming discouragers because we're not doing anything, that we are letting other people do our work for us, we become discouragers and we need to get out of that. We need to be encouragers. However that may be, the kind word, I mean, how many times has a kind word changed your day? You know, I don't want to single out Trudy, but Trudy calls people all the time. Thanks, Trudy. I appreciate that. Cards. I just love getting cards, don't you? It's just amazing when, you know, Joe and Marion, and maybe I'm calling all the Holland family this morning, but Joe and Marion sent all the cards out. I like getting them. You know, Marion, you bought them in 1942. I know that, but I love getting them. You know, thank you. It's fantastic to get those little things, and it doesn't mean much. You know, it's not an effort, but everything we do when we become an encourager instead of a discourager is a positive action. And positive actions and being active in our mission, helping us win this war. That's what we all need to be doing. Thank you for your attention.